and welcome to That Gabby Roslin Podcast, part of the Acast Creator Network. My guest this week is the wonderful actor Jimmy Akinbola. Now, his documentary, Jimmy Akinbola, Handle With Care, is so moving and so beautiful. You can catch it on Tuesday, the 1st of November, 9 o'clock on ITV. And of course, if you're listening after the 1st of November, you can see it on the ITV Hub. It is beautiful. He's a wonderful man. I do hope you enjoy this chat. Don't forget, you can keep up to date by following and subscribing, please, to the podcast, where a new episode is released every Monday. Leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. And whilst you're there, why not leave us a review? We love to hear your thoughts. Now, on with the show. Jimmy, what's so lovely is to actually sit opposite you, because I've interviewed you down the line. But this is, I get to see
this is
you.
It. In person. You can't be in person.
No, you really can't.
So thank you for having me on. And
no,
yeah,
it's
you
lovely
know.
To talk
and
to
it's
you.
It's an honor. I'm opposite the Gabs.
Oh, you are a man of so many talents. I mean, you're now, you know, you're Mr. Bel Air. I mean, there you are in Hollywood. You've got this extraordinary documentary that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. You make the quiz shows on TV.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't know.
I know.
Yeah.
And I did know.
I love it.
And you've got your own production company, and you've been an actor for years, and people think of you comedy actor and straight actor as well. Okay, wait. You choose. Where shall we start?
Where should we start? Why don't we start with the documentary?
Okay,
you know,
let's do that.
I think so.
Mind blowing.
You know, yeah. You know, Handle With Care is something I've been thinking about for quite a few years. Of, you know, I've never sort of been public about sort of my journey, and it's not that I've been ashamed about it. It's just personal. You know,
it is. And the documentary is extraordinary. So let's explain. It's your life.
Yeah.
It's how you were brought up. It's by the family that brought you up, your foster family who were white. But it goes back to the very, very beginning. And I have to say, watching it, there was never a moment where I felt heartbroken. I just felt like I wanted to hold your hand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It does. It does.
I mean, you're when you were very young. Do you remember? I know you tell the story in your documentary about when you were very young, but do you remember going through that pain with your family?
I remember tiny bits, not really the pain, but I remember being a little bit in a children's home. I always say I've got a memory of me drinking orange juice in an orange cup and a digestive biscuit. And some kids, other kids around. And then it jumps to, I'm in a flat with my biological mom and then my foster mom, and I'm in between the two of them.
So, you remember that?
I do, you know, and then there's another jump, and we're not in a flat anymore. We're in a house in East London in Plaistow, Canning Town, and I'm surrounded by, you know, my foster family, and then my family, and that's the norm. And then what helped me from a young age, I always knew exactly what the situation was, if that makes sense, in terms of my mom, my biological mom, Eunice, would come and visit me every 2 weeks. So there was that sense where, oh, I'm with this family, and then I'd be reminded when my mom would come and visit me, you know?
So what was that like, though? Because then they were white.
Yeah, yeah.
They were a black child fostered by a white family, two boys and a girl.
Yeah.
And we get to meet them. Mm-hmm. Thank you for introducing us to all of the family as well, because as a viewer, it's so intimate. It really is intimate.
Oh, thank you.
But how did you feel for your biological mom to step in? Were there times where you thought, please don't, because this is my family?
I always yearned for that connection with my biological family, you know? And then sometimes it was difficult because I felt guilty, because I've got this loving white foster family that's doing everything for me, you know, raising me well, but I still missed my biological family. So, but that they created a space that I was able to love my biological mum and be with my mum, Eunice, and actually I enjoyed it. It was just joyful, because they got on as well. I'd be like, Mom, do you want a cup of tea? Mom, do you want a cup of tea? You know, they'd be sitting down together in the kitchen, or we'd watch musicals together or TV. It was really easy. And actually, you know, I think a couple of tough moments, the confusing moments is where, you know, my mom was, she could be a strict Nigerian woman, you know. And so there'd be times where if I was doing something or I hadn't, you know, sort of combed my hair as well as it should have been, she would take me upstairs and I would get this, what I call like a snippet of how it would be if I grew up with my mom or my mom and dad were together, in terms of, you know, we're not going to allow this to happen. You need to do this, 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 this. And I remember I'd be crying like, ah, why are you doing this? And it was different ways of bringing up your child, yeah. You know, but at the same time, it was joy, you know. I think
that's a good word.
Yeah, joy. Joy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The difficult thing, I think, were the gaps of not seeing my mom, because my biological mom suffered from schizophrenia, and sometimes she was not well, she might have been sectioned, and then the gaps of my siblings and my dad. That was hard. And the social services would be like, oh, you can't see your brother and your brothers or your sister. Or, you know, your dad doesn't want to see you. Being told that when you're like five, six, seven. That's real pain. That's pain. But when you're a kid and you're loved so much, you know, this unconditional love that my family, the Crows, gave me, that it landed, but then it would be washed away. And I call it in the back drawer. You know what I mean? Because I've got so much love around me, you know? And so I don't think I would always completely process that pain, you know? I think somehow I developed a way to pull it somewhere, you know? And I think it helped because I had so much love and care coming my way. If I didn't have that, then I think I'd be staring at that. And I think, you know, things would have gone a different way.
What was it like being a black child in a white family? Did you feel different? I get the feeling that your family didn't make you feel different, and they felt that you weren't, you know, that you had different color skin. Yeah. And of course you're not different.
Mm-hmm.
But years ago, you know, I can imagine, and I hate the fact that I can imagine that people weren't understanding of this.
Yeah. In the home, in some ways, I never felt different until... maybe I'm watching the news, you know, or reading a newspaper, you know, about certain issues that normally would have things to do, you know, issues about race, you know.
Right, okay.
Only a few occasions like that. But the majority of time was when we would leave London and go out on trips to Broadstairs, Hastings, or Devon. And suddenly I really felt completely different.
Because
it's the way people would look at me, you know. People would look at me and look at us as a family, you know, and it make me feel uncomfortable.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, it really upsets me.
Yeah, it was hard. And we talk about it in the doc, and it's that thing of where I don't want to bring it up because I know my family love these trips, and I knew what it meant to the family, but it was really hard. And I would get a little bit in London, but not as much because London's London, you know? But you still get a few sort of looks and whatnot, but it was so much more diverse, you know, in London, you know? You would see mixed race families and whatnot. But that was the hardest part. And, but what I loved about my foster family is that my mom wouldn't ignore it. My mom and dad wouldn't ignore it. You know, it's not that we'd have these deep conversations, but they talk about there was no manual. And my mom says, I didn't do anything. I just loved you. I just brought you up. But actually, in everything that they did, stuff like sharing influential figures like Sidney Poitier with me. And my mom, even in her 40s, knew what that man represented to black people and to the world. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And she was introducing that man to me on purpose. Or she'd be telling me, oh, Chris Akabusi, he's like you, he's Nigerian.
I know, and he's in the documentary, and Ian's in the documentary.
Yeah, but these little things were about helping me with my identity and, yeah, and knowing absolutely. Myself. You know, it wasn't, oh, you're different, you're one of them. It's like,
oh, no, I get but, that. But they're saying, like, look what you can look do what as you well. Can do.
Look at, yeah, look how amazing all these people are. And they would do that, you know. And I remember watching stuff like Roots, you know, like watching Roots.
Yeah.
And my dad's trying to watch the racing, and my mom's like, no, he has to watch this. Like, that was really
she
like.
She sounds a good, that was, good
yeah,
woman.
Yeah, 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 yeah. They she is, and the whole family is, you know. And I think I talk about it a lot. If I wasn't introduced to things like that, if my foster siblings didn't have black friends, and if I wasn't in a diverse area, it would have been really different. And I think I would have been a different kind of man. And I think sometimes when I meet my mixed race friends, I feel like I've had that kind of upbringing. You know, I've had enough of my culture around me via my family, via my non-blood family as well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? My Nigerian yeah. friends, my Jamaican friends, my Asian friends. And I think my journey has shown me that family isn't just blood. And I am the man I am today because of my environment growing up that had so many amazing people in it. And
have you been to Nigeria?
I have. I've been to Nigeria once, and I should go again. It's been tricky just because when my mum's side of the family, there's not many of them anymore. I don't really know them. And the few that were around were my dad's side of the family. And so the one time I went to see his side of the family. I got to see where my grandma was buried, and there's a street named after us, Akinbola Street. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was amazing.
You
was
obviously amazing. Have a photograph of you standing
I
under
do,
that street
I
sign.
Do,
good,
I
I'm
do.
Pleased to
it
hear it.
Yeah, it didn't make the doc, but I do have that. I do have that. But at the same time, I think there's a sense I've not been able to really lean and connect because of the difficult relationship me and my father have had, you know. And yeah, I do want to go and spend more time in Nigeria. And it's quite interesting, like my middle names are Bamidele and Olatokunbo.
Oh, you know, I love, what beautiful names.
Thank you.
What do they mean?
And the
do
loose meanings are like return home with me and bring wealth from abroad. So Yoruba in the
You're
culture,
kidding me.
When you are born, your names are normally given to you around your circumstances, you know. And so being a British-born Nigerian, you know, I think these names are perfect, but also perfect in terms I am an actor, you know, my name is global, but also even doing this doc, some of the people that I'm talking about now are not here anymore, and I just feel like I'm honouring my name, and I'm doing this as a love letter to both my families, and especially those that are not here anymore, you know.
Well, congratulations on it. As I said, it's beautiful. It's very personal. Yes, I did have tears in my eyes, but for the right reasons.
Thank you. Thank you.
It really is something very special. As there's this moment, a shot of you with your foster siblings on a bench, and there's a cut. I know you made the documentary, but there's a shot of your hands on the bench, and that has stayed with me.
Oh,
there's that
you.
Shot. It's just
thank you.
It's this beautiful moment. I recommend everybody see it. And actually, one of my oldest friends, this is his story as well. And he wasn't. I mean, he loved his adopted family so much, but he wasn't in London.
Wow.
And he was looked at. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You are different, you know. It's all of that.
Yeah, it really is a different experience if you are not from London, you know. And I think a lot of people ask me, what are you saying? And I'm saying, like, unconditional love is really important, but I'm like, education is important as well.
Yes.
And where we are now,
if
you're pointing someone with a family that is of a different race, there needs to be a high level of education from that family, and the environment needs to support that child.
Absolutely.
I am saying that,
absolutely.
You know. I'm not just saying put anyone with anyone anywhere. No, because it's really hard, you know.
It's important, you know, to learn about where we come from,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
You know, and also, if we can talk about diversity, because of course you make the show for ITV2 as well, mm-hmm. the quiz show, and a lot of the things you do are about diversity. And I think diversity, it's funny that a lot of people now don't want to talk about it because they felt it was too talked about.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's important to keep that conversation going.
Yes.
You and I have had the conversation on radio about it.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, coming back to Handle With Care, like, I didn't want to this just to be a black kid with a white family story. This
it's
story
not.
Is universal.
It's not. No, it's
It's
not.
Universal. Yeah. It could be anyone. And during the documentary, we met people like an Indian family that adopted a Nigerian girl and also a black family that's fostered some white kids.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
It's universal. It's a global story. It's not just a story that should be out on Black History Month. You know, it's much bigger than that. But within the stories we want to tell, my production company, Trifles Productions, it is in the DNA of everything that we do, you know? Even if you look at the game show, Sorry I Didn't Know, the diversity inclusion in that is that you've got female captains.
Yes!
It's not, we've got black female captains, even though that is a thing, they're the first, but it's got, we've got
no,
female captains. Yes. When you look at all these male-dominated or white male-dominated shows, that, you know, you never see a woman being a captain, or you've never seen, you know, I call myself the black Stephen Fry. You know, you don't see a guy like me in the chair. But also it's about the content. The content is about black history, but it's all our history, right? You can't talk about history in schools and then not cover this whole area.
Absolutely.
That just almost erases, you know, even when we think about the war, I've grown up watching war films with my foster family and Pride and Prejudice. It's like, what, we weren't around? Of course we were around. But like, it's, our stories are not being told. Yeah. Without getting too political, if you've not been told the full extent of history, then you will have certain thoughts about certain
people,
immigrants and da-da-da. But if you knew your history, it would make sense why certain people are here, and you would maybe divert that frustration elsewhere.
Surely, but we should just be, you know, open and warm. And we're getting too political, so we'll leave it.
Leave it.
But oh my God, this government. Now let's, that's it. Hand end of that bit. Yeah. So congratulations on the documentary.
Thank you.
Obviously we have to talk about the acting as well. So we've talked about, are you doing more of the quiz?
Yes.
Oh,
we
good.
Just
good, good.
Did season 3 of Sorry I Didn't Know.
Congratulations.
So I was able to fit that in.
So right. Well. Okay. So we're going to have Jimmy the quiz master, we're going to have Jimmy the documentary maker, and everybody has to watch it. That's how good it is. And I will be sharing it everywhere I can.
Thank you.
No, seriously. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
It. Let's talk about, you know where I'm going now. Let's fly over the water to sunny America. And now we land in Bel Air. I'm in. Oh, excuse me.
I'm living the dream.
Are you really?
I am. We all grew up watching this amazing show, right? I remember watching Home and Away, singing that Home and Away. Yeah, I can't sing. Their neighbors.
I wasn't going to say
bump, bump. And then at 6 p.m. you switch it over to BBC Two and it's like, this is a story all about
Do you know
that.
Every word?
No, I don't. So I'm not going to do it. I don't.
Sorry,
I
my
don't.
Kids. So my kids, every single word. They weren't around that the first time. They know every single word, and they're shocked I don't know it.
It's crazy. I know. I think I've got audio dyslexia or something. I don't know.
You must know a bit.
I do.
This
I know
is
the story all about how my life got flipped upside down. And I like to take a minute and just sit right there, tell you how I became Jeffrey of the new dramatic version of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yes. But tell everybody how you got it, because I know the story, but they might not.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was having a year of getting close to some really big things, and you know, you're the guy, and then it goes somewhere else. And then when I got the email about auditioning for Bel-Air, it said Jeffrey in like mid-50s. I was like, I'm a young man. I was like, I play characters, I can do stuff like Crackhead Mick or, you know, Valentine Idris in the Long Run. But I was like, no, I can't do 55. I'm tired. I'm going to hold out for something else. And then America's like, no. They really want you. Ignore the age. They want you. So I was a bit sulky about it. I said, if it's more than 3 pages of dialogue, I'm not going to do it. I opened up the attachment. It was like 2.5 pages. I was like, okay, I can learn this easily. And it was one of those things, Gab. I put on a 3-piece suit. It was a random hot sort of July day. And I did the self-tape. And then suddenly I fell in love with it. I was like,
really?
This is so me. Yeah, I just
felt
like,
oh my God, see that feeling.
I just was like, I can do this. I know this character. And so I went from, nah, I'm not really bothered, to really wanting it. And then I didn't hear anything. One of my best mates in LA, he got like a producer session to audition again. So I was like, well, if I'm not going to get it, you're going to get it. I'm really happy for you, through gritted teeth. And I love him, Anthony Barrow, fantastic actor. And then out of nowhere, I get an email when I wake up one Thursday morning saying, Jimmy, from my agents in America, they want to see you tonight. And I was like, that's so unfair. I've got a really busy day. And my agent was like, do you want me to push it till Friday? I was like, no, let's just do it. Let's just do it. But I rushed back to, because I do my self-tapes with my niece, Fola Evans-Akambola, who's in the British version of Call My Agent, 10%. And I got to her apartment about 8:30 and the audition was at 9. I am sweating. I look like a mess. But I got myself together and then I put on the Zoom because, you know, it was still pandemic.
Yeah.
And I could see the producers and they're talking to me. They're like, all right, let's go. And as soon as they said, let's go, I couldn't see anyone. So I could just only hear them. So I'm like, wait, guys, you want me to audition, but I can't see anyone. They were blaming me. Have you done something with your phone? I was like, no, this is not my first Zoom audition. So I had to do the biggest audition of my life without seeing the person I'm acting with. You know, and they were crashing on my lines. The director was giving me notes, but because I couldn't see his eyes, I was like, are these all negative notes?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can say to you, Gabby, give me more swag. You know what I mean? But if I can see your face, it's like, oh, yeah, you're happy with what I'm doing. Or it could be like, yeah, Gab, you're looking a bit stiff. Go loosen it up a bit. So suddenly I got in my head and I just felt like I was messing it up. And then we got to the end of the audition and they're like, do you want to do it again? I was like, no, I'm good. And then I said, okay, let me do one more version. And I'll just, you know, throw everything at the wall. And I did that. And then I was so upset. I remember emailing my team going, look, this is probably the worst audition I've ever had. I'm not being OTT actor, but it was bad. The signal was out. I couldn't see people. I was in my head and I was sweating a lot. And then I let it go. I let it go. I really made peace with sometimes it goes that way. And then out of the blue, I get a call like 2 weeks later. My American agent's like, congratulations, you're playing Joffrey. And I was like, I'm like, Joffrey? I didn't go up for Game of Thrones. I'm like, oh, you mean Jeffrey? We say Jeffrey. She's like, oh, sorry. And then, yeah, tears of joy, Gab. Tears of joy because
just wonderful.
It's the job I moved to, you know, sort of started living in between here and LA 4 or 5 years ago. And it's also the show, the full circle of our conversation that for me represents inclusion and diversity.
Yes. Yes.
Do you know what I mean? That show was a hit. You know, for everybody, no matter where you were from, how old you were, it was an iconic show. And so to be playing the iconic character, Jeffrey, is a dream come true. And the biggest thing about it for me also is that Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is based off of a care story. You know, Benny Medina was adopted by a white foster family in America and they created the Fresh Prince off of his experience. But because of the lack of black stories on TV and the black middle class, they turned it into the Banks family, a black family. And now I'm in the story that represented my own story. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a beautiful thing, you know?
So what's it like to be in it? So what's it like to be a star now in America? Because this is, you're living the dream. Oh, you're smart. That was adorable. I wish people could see. You actually, you blushed and you did that. Oh, she just said it. Yes, I said it.
What is it like? What is it like?
Okay, give me like, what's your favorite thing to eat? Do you like cake, chocolate?
Ate it, you know,
savory
what?
Ice cream.
My favorite thing. I love apple crumble. Okay, with so, ice cream.
So is it apple crumble and ice cream?
It's that first bite. You know, fresh out the oven,
yes,
apple crumble and
Jimmy,
ice cream.
Yes,
it really is. It really is. And
why?
Because, you know, it takes a lot of guts to bet on yourself. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, why are you spending time in America? Why did you leave Holby? And, you know, and to back yourself with like, I don't know, a year's worth of money in your back pocket. I wasn't invited to the US. I just knew that there was more to me than what the UK was offering me at that moment in time. And so it's such a joy to be go like, oh, this job represents that move to America
yeah.
for me.
You but know? It's pretty. Do you know what? We all have that, don't we? It's that, see, I told you I could do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not that, it's not that, it's wow.
Yeah.
For you as well,
yeah,
it's that moment, oh gosh,
yeah,
I could do it.
Yeah.
When did you know you could do it?
I mean,
how long ago? I don't just mean the American part.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole of Jimmy
like
that we all know,
yeah,
the acting, the producing, the all of this. When did it come to you?
The acting part, I just saw it as like, because I started off in comedy, I just enjoyed making people laugh. So I was just like, oh yeah, this is not hard. This is fun. I can be silly. And then I had to go to drama school to realize, oh, it's more than just making people laugh. And actually, I do love drama. And so I think during drama school, I realized, oh yeah, I can do this. I had a natural ability, but now I've got the technique. And then I think with the producing and stuff, with our production company and the events, that was a surprise. You know, that was a bit about owning your power, your personality. I realized I create experiences. I'm good at bringing people together. I've worked with a lot of people. I spot talent, and it's like, it suddenly twigged. I was like, oh, that is a bit like producing. You know what I mean? And also there's that selfless part of me that I know what I can do and where I'm going, but I love helping people. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's because I was fostered, because I've had people,
You've had people helping you.
For me over the years. And it's really interesting. Fraser Ayers, my business partner with the production company, you know, he's mixed race, his wife is white. And so we get told, oh, we're the black production company, but our world is much more nuanced and diverse than that, you know? And if you see
you're a production company.
Yeah,
that's production company.
Yeah. And so it's just a joy to work and move in a certain way, you know? Because representation is important to me.
Yeah, but you knew.
But I knew I could do it.
You knew you could do it.
I knew I could do it. I don't know. I just sort of, I could see the gaps. I could look at other people going, but they're a bigger profile than me. Why are they not doing it? And I felt like I couldn't just move in a way. I was talking to my publicist about this, that just being an actor, I wanted it to be a bit of a game changer, you know? I wanted to disrupt the norm of how things work here in the UK, and so did Fraser. And when you are working in the industry, we realized that we were like insiders, outsiders. You know what I mean? We could be on a production and go, we can see what the issues are, what the problems are. And actually, we're good at translating. You know, when you like the next Michaela Cole, we're good at going, look, you need to write a bit like this, or this is what they mean when they say that. And also we realize that it's about access. If you can create a bridge of access, that's great. But there's a lot of people that don't want to do that. It's like one in, one out. The system's so hard to be successful that, you know, I'm going to close some people that close the door rather than leave it open. And I think if you look at Sorry I Didn't Know, the opening door is like we give a platform to all our top different types of comedians out there, you know? Or if you look at Handle With Care, this is my story, but the subject's bigger than me, you know? And I'm praying that it opens the door for more conversation. I'm hoping it will inspire people to adopt or foster. I'm hoping that the 12-year-old version of myself, that will inspire them and realize that they can have a life, even though they're coming through the care system, that their starting off point doesn't have to dictate the future. You know what I mean? And that's the way that I am with my creativity and with my work. You know,
you're paying it forward.
Yeah. And I'm really passionate about it. And as I've always been like that. And as you learn and you grow, you just realize, oh, it's about owning your power. It's about being your authentic self. And also it's about allowing yourself to be vulnerable as well. I think, you know, it's quite easy just to do one-to-one thing and not spread yourself so much. But I think even again, bringing it back to the doc, what I loved about it, that you had grown men and grown black men, actually, you don't see that often on TV, being vulnerable, you know, and that's a through line of the documentary. And I think it is all about the journey and growth and leaning into sort of difficult conversations and realizing that on the other side of that, good things can happen.
You get to spend time with, we mentioned already Chris Akabusi and Ian, but Chris was somebody, I mean, so there you were, right? So you're in a TV show,
yeah,
that you watched as a child.
Yep.
You're meeting your childhood heroes.
Yeah.
Let's go to that pinch me. Yeah. You know, when you were that young boy watching, yeah, Fresh Prince,
yeah,
looking at Chris Akabusi,
yeah,
seeing Ian Wright, you must just be like, look what's happened.
You're right.
And this, so much more is still going to happen.
And so much
more.
I mean, if I'm honest with you, the last 4 or 5 years has been ridiculous without like name dropping.
Go now.
Well, look, I've been working with Brenda Blethyn, yeah. You know, like you said, Lenny Wonderful. James, Chris Akabusi, you know.
Love Lenny.
Ian McKellen,
Ian.
You know, Dustin Hoffman. And Liam Hemsworth, Jason Sudeikis.
Can I come to that party, please?
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, of course you're with Hannah, my lovely friend Hannah Waddingham.
Yeah, yeah,
love
she's
Hannah.
Amazing.
She's
yeah.
a goddess.
And Ted Lasso, yeah, and it's Ted her Lasso. Moment. And then I'm like, wow, it's been an amazing year. And then I'm meeting Will Smith. And that was a surreal moment. It was... I had to pinch myself multiple times.
I love that.
Multiple
love that.
Times. And yet, knowing that we all got co-signed. I was one of the first cast for Bel-Air, you know? And I remember getting a message from one of the producers saying, Will loves what you're doing. He loves, these kids love you. Jada loves you. And it's just like, wow. And he was so open and giving when I met him on the premiere. And then the other side of that is meeting Joseph Marcel, you know, so who played the original
yes,
Jeffrey.
Yes.
And already he played my father in Death in Paradise. And so I remember it was a moment gap. It was in Guadeloupe. It's one of those jobs, all actors love it, you know,
yeah.
whether they love the show or not, you know, I love the show, but they love it, you know, and we're on the beach together. And I was like, Joseph, does this ever get, you know, a bit old? A bit? He's like, no, dear boy. He's like, no, dear boy. It never gets old. I love it. And we're both there on a day off by the beach together. And I think I got a picture that I posted on Twitter and we're both pointing at each other in our white vests. A few years later, how crazy is it that I'm playing his character?
I love that.
It's just beautiful. It's meant
Jimmy,
to be.
Jimmy, so much is going to be happening for you because you're just open to it all. And I think that's, you know, that because I over the 35 years that I've been doing this and the people that I've interviewed, you know, the ones that stuff is going to come to because you're open and
Thank
you're
you.
Ready and you want it to come to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, like I said, you're paying it forward. Mm. You're a good man. Oh, oh my God. I'm so excited
Thank
for you.
You. I'm
so excited for you. Jimmy, what makes you laugh? What makes you properly belly laugh?
Really, 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 really good comedy. Really,
so what's really good comedy?
Okay, really good comedy. I would say, well, I grew up watching stuff like The Fresh Prince, you know.
You're gonna not allowed to mention
okay,
that one.
Okay,
no.
Okay. Ricky, you know, Ricky Gervais, you know,
okay, yeah.
you know, like his stuff can really make me laugh out loud. I think people like Chappelle, I think people Gina Yashere, she's a great female UK
yes,
stand-up
I
comedian.
Know.
I'm trying to think, what have I laughed out loud most recently? What really got me?
You've got a great laugh.
You know what? Growing up with my foster brothers, they would watch films like Eddie Murphy films, you know, Steve Martin, Richard Pryor. They would laugh at the scene and then rewind it. And laugh at the scene as if they'd just watched it the first time. And I think that had a massive impact on me. You know, I love seeing people crying with laughter.
Yeah, me
you know?
Too.
But also, I think it also made me go, yeah, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to make people laugh. And like seeing my big brothers like cackle with laughter. I was like, that's beautiful. And I love feeling that. Do you know what I mean? I love feeling that when I watch certain comedies and stuff like that. And
it's the best feeling. Laughter yeah. is the best medicine.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And yeah. And some random things will make me laugh as well. I would rather laugh for the majority of my days than just moan and be quiet. You know what I mean? It's
yeah,
such a good
too.
Feeling. It's such a good feeling.
Oh, you're lovely, Jimmy. Thank you so much for being on this. And
Thank
and
you.
Continued good luck with it all. And so when will we see season 2 of Bel-Air?
So season 2 of Bel-Air is coming out next year sometime.
Okay.
Maybe March.
Okay.
You know,
oh, okay.
March,
not
April.
Too long to
yeah,
wait.
Yeah, not too long to wait. And then, yes, Handle With Care is coming out before the end of the year.
Perfect.
Yeah, and Sorry I Didn't Know is in October. And
can
I think,
you tell me about anything else?
The Tower. Filming The Tower season
yeah.
2, and that should be coming out maybe January next year.
So we're going to be jimmied. We are going to be jimmied.
I don't know if you can say that.
Yeah, why? Yeah, can you not? Is it rude? I don't know. Okay.
I'm only joking.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to be akimbolaed.
No, I like that.
Better?
I like that. Yeah,
we're
going
to be akimbolaed.
Akimbola season.
Okay. Yeah, good.
We like
that's good. Yeah. And I'm sure you're going to be producing other stuff as well.
Yeah, yeah. There's, you know, I'd like, you know, in terms of this Handle with Care, I feel like we would like to create a format with that and tell other stories with care.
Say, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
But also there's a drama off the, but there's a movie.
There is. You know,
I'm not telling you that there is, but now there obviously is. I guessed. Okay. Well, good luck with that as well. Jimmy, what a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure's mine.
No, it's mine. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my chat with the very lovely and very gorgeous Jimmy Akinbola. Now, you can catch his documentary, as we said. It's called Jimmy Akinbola, Handle With Care. That is on Tuesday, the 1st of November, 9 p.m. on ITV. And if you're listening to this after that date, you can watch it on the ITV Hub. Coming up next week, MasterChef's very own Greg Wallace. That Gabby Roslin podcast is proudly presented to you by Cameo Productions, with music by Beth Macari. If you wouldn't mind, could you give us a like, a follow, a subscribe, and please leave a review? We read them all and love to see what you've got to say. See you next week.